You're listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. And now, here's Nate.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today is episode 230 here on the Nate Lull Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Lull, and I always get excited when I can welcome in a fellow local media guy like myself to the podcast. So my guest today is Scott Cecina. He recently took a new role at Binghamton University, but before that, he did a little bit of everything at WBNG-TV down in Binghamton. And he's somebody that I've looked up to and admired his work on the air because he's done everything. He's been behind the camera. He's been a sports guy, a news guy. He's anchored in the morning. He's anchored in the evening. If there is a job at the TV station, he's probably done it. So wanted to sit down with Scott and talk about his transition from WBNG to his new role, where he's a communication manager at Binghamton University, and he'll get to explain all of that, but also just what it meant to him to be in the local media community for so long. He's a guy that grew up here and wanted to be in local television, went to school, made that happen. So I thought that his journey was very interesting, and I just kind of wanted to pick his brain on all of that. And he's been through some really tough times and interesting times in his life, and I wanted to get his perspective on that, and he didn't disappoint. He gave some really good life advice, and I appreciate him making the trip up to Sydney to chat with me. So I know you're going to enjoy episode 230 today. All right, before we get into today's interview, I want to thank a few of our special sponsors, including Covered Bridge Farm Market of Unadilla, NYCM Insurance of Edmiston, Sportsfield Specialties of Delhi, the Amphenol Corporation of Sydney, Preferred Mutual Insurance Company of New Berlin. We have SFCU, Morabito Gresham Insurance, Certified Auto Outlet of Oneonta, Clark Sports Center of Cooperstown, Certified Financial Planner Ed Curley, the Delaware National Bank of Delhi, New York Pizzeria of New Berlin, Rinker Insurance Agency of Afton, Quality Hardwoods and Twin Valley Finish Lumber, Spike's Pizza and Grocery of Edmiston, the NBT Insurance Agency, DTC Delhi Telephone Company, Gavin's Pizzeria of Sydney, and Morabito Energy Products. Episode 230 today. I hope you'll enjoy, folks. Thanks for checking back on the Nate Lull Podcast. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Today is episode 230 here on the Nate Lull Podcast. Glad to be back in studio again. If you had a chance to go back and listen to 229, that's our Norwich Wrestling Reunion series that we're kicking off. And of course, just before this, I will have done our interview on the 100 miler. So a lot of good stuff. But today I've been really looking forward to this. We've been working on it for a few weeks, but I have the former WBNG jack of all trades in here. Scott Cecina is with us, and I want to hear about what he's doing these days. But, you know, thanks for coming up. I really appreciate you, you know, making the trek up here to Sydney.
Yeah, of course, Nate. I'm excited. It's my first podcast, so I'm really excited to be here. It wasn't too bad of a drive, but yeah, I know. Yeah, we've been working on it for a little while now. I'm really excited about it. A lot to talk about.
So, I mean, first off, I feel like I have a bunch of burning questions as two media guys sitting in this room, but you know, first off, why don't you tell us about your new role? You start a new job, and I'm interested in hearing about what you're doing now at BU.
Yeah, so I am a communication manager at Binghamton University. The easy way to think about it is basically a reporter for the university. There's a bunch of different schools within BU, like the nursing school, engineering school, and all that. I'm in charge of the pharmacy school.
Oh, okay.
So I help write for their magazine and help, you know, find stories to kind of highlight what the pharmacy school is doing. And it's pretty interesting because it is a brand new school, just opened in 2017, I believe, 2018. When I first started reporting at WBNG, I did a story about them announcing the pharmacy school. It's kind of full circle moment here. But yeah, so, you know, I do social media work for the school and for the pharmacy school and just kind of, you know, fix any things on the website, stuff like that. Kind of a very different experience, but I'm really enjoying it so far.
So one of my other burning questions was, and what really kind of got me thinking about doing this podcast was watching your last day sign off at BNG. Yeah. And just like, man, you killed it. Like, I don't know, in that moment, this obviously your career, your TV career meant a lot to you, yeah. but you held it together in such an emotional moment. What was that like preparing for that and knowing you're going to be on the air with all these colleagues watching you? How was that?
I don't know how I made it through that. No, to be truthfully honest. So like, it's one of those things where I spent probably, because I had known for about a month that I was going to be leaving. You know, I kept it kind of to my close family and friends and stuff like that. And then I made the announcement socially on, you know, public or social media that week, that Monday. And then I'm thinking about it, and that, like, leading up 2 weeks, I was trying to write it, trying to figure out what to say, what not to say, all, you know, just trying to make it sound good because you don't want to have it go on too long and all this other stuff. But I practiced it so many times. And then I get into the studio, I do the hour and a half show, and then it gets to the final block, and it just comes out to me on camera three. That was my camera. But before that, I hear the door open, you know, behind the studio, and all of my colleagues come walking out.
Oh,
and
man.
I wasn't expecting that at all. And I knew my wife Katie and son Max were going to be there too. And so they came in and they're standing off to the side, and I wasn't expecting everybody there. And then the camera, you know, the light flashes on, and I can see the preview of myself. And I didn't – I kind of ad-libbed the very beginning where I'm like, this is going to be difficult, so stick with me. So here we go. And then off we went. And you can kind of tell after the first sentence I paused because I was like – even now I'm kind of getting goosebumps about it just because I'm like, am I going to make it through this thing?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, gave obviously a shout-out to my mom and dad, as I will right now, you know, some of my biggest supporters, and my wife, Katie, and some Max, my family, and all my friends have supported me over the 11-year career I had in news. But then going through that, there was a couple of times where, especially, you know, I mentioned Caitlin Pearson, my co-anchor, who I was alongside for 3 years. You know, she's one of my best friends, and so it was kind of difficult leaving her. And what I've told people is that I do miss it. You know, to be truthfully honest, like, it's a great atmosphere.
Yeah, how could you not?
And I miss the people more than anything else. Those relationships and those friendships and those connections you make are what really make that business, as you know, as special as it is. It is, you know, not all glamorous. We'll talk about that in a while here. But like, those connections and those friendships are what you really remember. And that is why it was so difficult to leave, because I miss those people every single day. I still see them. I grab brunch with them and lunch and stuff like that and hang out. And we text and stuff. So it's not like they're completely, you know, out of my life. But yeah, going through that. And then when I mentioned Katie and Max in studio, who they are the reason why I made this change. Because there's a big part of me that didn't want to leave. There's
sure.
a big part of me that was like, you know, I love doing this. I went to school for this. This is a passion of mine. I feel like I was born to do this. But as I've said on social media and told people, it's not about me, it's about we. And that is what I've really tried to hone in on and remember my motivation behind going forward. Because, you know, in the end, this move, I fully believe, you know, is what's best for my family in the long run.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that was my big decision in leaving WBNG, is because this opportunity came along and I couldn't pass it up. Yeah.
When did that, and this is something that, I mean, we talked a little bit off air about chatting about this, because I feel like you and I are also in the same situation where, you know, we've been married for a couple of years yeah. and have new babies in our lives, which changes a lot. And when you work in an industry where there really isn't an off the clock type of deal.
Yeah.
And so when did you kind of start thinking about that? Because I think it's tough as a young person in this industry, quote unquote young, you know,
yeah.
and it's like, how do you know what to do? I'm just looking for advice there. Not that I'm saying I want to leave or anything, but you know, it's just
yeah.
hard to know what to do.
It's different for everybody. I mean, so like for me, when I was on my shift originally was 2:45 to 11:45 at night.
Yeah.
And so Katie was working at the hospital part time, you know, or a few days a week from usually 6 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. And so we barely saw each other. And then, you know, when you have now you add a newborn into the mix, it's like you really start to try to figure out your priorities. And that is the part where, again, like I said, everybody's different. Some people have these schedules that line up perfectly and stuff like that. And other people need to kind of figure out, is this sustainable? Is this something I can do for the next, you know, 5, 10, 15 years type of thing? Am I willing to possibly miss little league games or soccer practices and swimming lessons and stuff? And that was, you know, Katie and I talked about it for hours. And it was one of the things where it's like, I can't continue to do 2:45 to 11:45. Some people do it because maybe they don't have any other option. You know, that's what it is. But I was given this opportunity and this chance to be able to say, look, I can work 8 to 4. I can get out in time to see maybe if he wants to do little league or band or whatever. Whatever, you know, I have this opportunity now in my life to be able to be there more for my son. So it's just – it's figuring out what works best for your family and really where your priorities lie. If you can make it work, then go for it. Make it work type of a thing. But that was the big decision for me, is kind of looking to the future, as difficult as it is kind of right now, not seeing, you know, the results that are going to be there. It's kind of knowing, okay, this is going to have a great impact years from now.
I think you're right. I think it's going to pay off big for you. Yeah. And you'll be so happy when you're at all those events. And I've been curious since my daughter came into my life, the amount of, you know, the people that you meet, as you said, it's all about the relationships, and for us in sports, coaches and getting to meet parents. And I can't tell you, and maybe you had the same situation, how many parents and coaches and teachers have said to me, hey, like, enjoy every minute, you know, make sure you're home with your wife, make sure you're home with the baby, because you're going to blink and she's going to be 18 and she's going to be graduating. And I couldn't believe how many people said that to me. Going into it, I was almost thinking that someone like a parent might be mad at me, like, hey, why weren't you at our game? And it was almost the opposite.
They understand.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Even so, like a great, you know, I'm at Wegmans the other day, just getting groceries, and I had, you know, people still coming up to me saying hi. Yeah. And say, we miss you, but all the comments on my page and all like the messages and when I talk with people, they get it. They understand. And that's the thing, because there is a big part of another, a weird part there, so you almost feel like you're letting people down.
Yes.
You almost feel like you have this obligation to be able to be there for them because you've been part of their lives for so long. But at the end of the day, they know that it's family first. And that's very reassuring when it's kind of like, okay, they're not mad at me. they totally understand type of a thing. Even, you know, my former bosses at WB&G, they understood. They understood my decision because it's like, yeah, family first, no matter what. I mean, this, we all only get, you know, one life type of a thing, and to make the most of it is, you know, put your priorities where they should be, in my opinion.
Yeah. I've thought a lot about this recently, and someone said this to me, that when you do a job like this, it becomes your identity in a way. So when you have to make a decision like you make, it's like you're almost giving up this identity, and like, what's the next step, right? Like, you're so used to being at the store and someone knows you and coming up to you. And that's like, it's a very cool part of the job to get to know so many people. And then to think you're going to go and just do this completely other thing, it has to feel so foreign to be doing something different, I would think.
Oh, no, absolutely. I mean, like, that was something even to – that I've been working on, is kind of having to rediscover who Scott Cicina is.
Right, yeah.
So, like, you know, this is something that I've – it's been part of my life for over a decade. And then almost learning a new language. But everyone at BU – in my department there, even people I don't even know or who aren't in my department have been so supportive. Just kind of like, look, this job is, you know, we know you're not like, you know, familiar with what's going on. They've been open to support, talking with me, any advice, like just training. It's been awesome over there. Just like the welcome that I've been able to receive there. But you're right. I mean, it all of a sudden going from 100 miles an hour to zero.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, as soon as I left the studio that Friday night in July, it was like, that's it. That's it. Like, that was my last broadcast. And now it's kind of like, I'm no longer Scott Cicina, the anchor.
Right.
So yeah, it's really having to rediscover who I am without that anchor role that I was in. And then, as you said, you know, people kind of still coming up to me and stuff like that. It, it's interesting to still kind of have that attention because it's cool. Like, you know, people still recognize me and stuff like that. And like I said in my goodbye, it's like, you know, I'm still going to be around.
Yeah.
I'm not like leaving the area, but it's taken a little time to kind of reflect on who I am without that anchor role. And I'm thinking about it a lot, and the only way I can kind of compare it to anything is, and I'm, as you know, I'm not anywhere near to a professional athlete, but say, for example, Tom Brady, you know, who's been a quarterback in the league for, you know, decades.
Oh, yeah.
And then all of a sudden he retires. And then it's like, okay, now he has to figure out what to do with his, you know what I mean?
It's very
true. You
see
that transition. You see, you know, the guys on, you know, Troy Aikman, who took their role and then transitioned it into broadcasting, or Terry Bradshaw, these other professional athletes who then, after their career's over, trying to figure out who are they without playing. And that's the only way I can kind of describe it, is like, I've gone from being that on-air role to now that's in my past, but I can still use the skills that I learned over that decade and transition it into my new role and continue to, you know, either teach others or continue to kind of make it my own and stuff like that.
Has it been hard, you know, when you work weird hours like that 2:45 to 11:45, are you finding yourself at like 10 o'clock at night, like you're still primed and ready to go? Like, has it been hard to kind of wind down a little bit?
Not really.
Not really?
No, the transition probably took about 2 weeks. So even before I was the evening anchor, I was the morning anchor.
Right.
So I was working 12:30 a.m. to 9 a.m.
Oh, gosh.
And so I would, you know, go home, have like my dinner, quote unquote, and then go to bed, wake up, Katie be home, so spend time with her. But then I go back to bed and sleep for a while and then go back into work. It was those hours. I did that for 4 years.
That's tough.
But when I transitioned from morning to evening, it took like 2 weeks. My body was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
But even then, so like after leaving the evening anchor role here, I've like really been able to pretty quickly like transition. I usually get up at 6:30 now. I, you know, feed Max, get him ready, and then I'm at work by 8 a.m., home by 4:30, and then it's kind of like it's so funny how the body just kind of like switches. It's like, oh, okay, it is what it is, and you have to do it. Like, you know what I mean? Because with his family especially, it's like, yeah, I have no other choice.
Yeah, you're in baby time,
exactly,
right?
So yeah.
There's been a few times recently where I know that if Josie wasn't here, I would have been super tired and I would have been like, oh, I got to go to bed. And it's like, but as soon as she needs something.
Exactly.
It's like you have this whole burst of energy.
You don't even think about it.
No.
You're just like, okay. You just go into dad mode. I absolutely get it. It's the same thing. Like if Max wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it's like, all right, now feed you real quick, change your buddy, and back to bed. And that's it. Yeah. It's so weird how that works.
Do you feel like you'll have a chance to do some TV side work? Would they bring you in for special events, or like, is that something you want to try to do on the side, or
at BU,
just in general? Like,
I mean, there's opportunities at BU for me to still do some video work and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't know if there is that opportunity to still do some like TV work out there. It'd be kind of cool maybe as like a freelancer and stuff like that, because it's still something I'm passionate about. But I've kind of really haven't focused on that too much. I've just kind of really just in the mindset of kind of just getting into the role of the job I have now and kind of just focusing on that. If the opportunity comes along in the future, I mean, yeah, sure. I won't probably say no. And
right.
If it lines up with like the family schedule and stuff like that, sure. But right now I'm just kind of just focusing on BU. But I mean, in the back of my head, yeah, that thought is still there, type of a thing.
What I also think is interesting about your story is you are a local guy and you stayed for so long. It's so common, I think, especially in the TV industry, to have your two-year deal and want to market hop and jump and travel. And we've all had friends that did that. And it's one thing I hear in my travels here is, oh, well, that guy's great, but he's not going to stay, you know, or she's great, but she's obviously going to move on. And we see it all the time, and you can't begrudge those people because they're on their journey and their path. But for you, being a local guy, staying, really being invested, being here for a decade, I mean, was that like the dream come true for you?
Yeah. I mean, I grew up watching WBNG, you know, with Candace Chapman and Greg Catlin.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so I grew up watching them. And I remember, a lot of people don't know this. I started at Fox 40. So I was a PA.
Oh, I didn't remember that.
Yeah. So I started behind the scenes running the audio board. And then I would go out and grab breaking news or stories with a camera. So I was like off air, I was behind the scenes. And then I kind of expressed some interest in doing on-air work. And so the news director there, Sue Neubauer, and management was like, sure, we'll put you on the weekends. You can grab some stories and stuff. And I was like, awesome. So I started like filming some stories, doing some stand-ups and putting myself in front of the camera, getting some practice. And slowly but surely, I was like, I really like this. This is like pretty cool. And I, at the same time, when I was at Fox, I was going to SUNY Broome. I was getting my associates there, getting ready to transfer to Oswego. And then after my first semester at Oswego, I made some friends at WBNG, Perry Russum, who's now at MSNBC. So he worked at BNG for a while. He said, hey, there's a videographer position open at the station. Candace is interested and would like to talk to you about it. And I was like, Candace Chapman wants to call me. Yeah. And then she called. I remember where I was. It was in Fennell Hall at Oswego on the first floor lobby. And I looked at my phone. I said, Candace Chapman. And I went, my heart like, you know, butterflies. I pick up the phone. I'm like, hello. Candace is like, hi, is this Scott? I'm like, yeah. And then we talked about me coming in for an interview and came in and it was, I sweating bullets. So nervous to meet Candace Chapman.
Right.
Meet Greg Catlin. And
it's funny how that works.
They offered me the position. I said, yes. I started as a videographer. My first couple weeks, I was traveling around covering stories. I got to go to New York City to cover the red carpet premiere of that movie, The Edge of Tomorrow, with Tom Cruise.
Because
the CW station at BNG had like a promotional deal where people could win tickets to go see it. So we went down and covered it too. And I got to do live shots. Well, I was the videographer, so I did live shots with Perry down there on the red carpet and stuff. We got to watch the movie. It was a whole thing. We got back at like 6 o'clock in the morning because it was a midnight premiere. It was my first 2 weeks, right? It was unbelievable. But it was so surreal, kind of like getting that start there. And then recently I had somebody tell me and comment on social media, I grew up watching you.
That
comment, when I saw like a high schooler comment on my post and be like, I remember watching you in the mornings. I've grown up watching you at WBNG. That kind of, whoa.
Yeah, that's a whoa moment.
That was a like whoa moment for me, because I was like, I felt the same way about Candace. And to know I kind of had that impact on a younger person really like solidified, wow, like I actually kind of did like leave my mark the way I wanted to. It was very weird. Made me feel pretty old too.
But yeah. I know, that's the thing when you have that moment. But it's so interesting to think about that. And I think we get so caught up in the stories and the moments and we realize, you know, that you're delivering the news, but you also don't realize like you're a part of someone's routine out there, just like this viewer, and like how many people you'll probably never even know about that enjoyed getting up and having breakfast or their coffee and watching you. Yeah. Like, that's kind of, I'm getting goosebumps thinking about it.
That's the thing is like whenever you're out in public and somebody comes up and says hi to me or to you, they know you, but you don't know them.
Yes.
So it's kind of a very weird dynamic where it's like, okay, this person knows me. This may be the first time they're ever interacting with me.
Yeah.
So first impressions are everything type of a thing. So the way I think about it is like, I may be having a bad day, but to this person, I don't know what they're going through, but they see me and they're getting excited. So it's like, I'll meet their energy. You know what? I'll say hi. I'll take a picture with them if they want. I'll like, you know, ask how their day is going and stuff, because they're going to remember that for a long time.
Yeah.
I may not, you know, remember their name and stuff like that, but they'll remember that moment. And that's what's important. And I think that's a big part of this business is, you know, specifically, it's like when we do this job, we're not doing it for ourselves. We're doing it for other people, especially when it comes to high school sports, as you know. The activity and everything, the coverage we give is for those kids, or the coverage we're doing is for the viewers at home and stuff like that. And I try to tell some of the new people when they were starting is like, you are, in a sense, a walking billboard. You represent, even when you are not working, you still represent the company that you work for. So you can go downtown, you can have fun and do what you want, but at the end of the day, remember, people will see you and remember you. And that's something that kind of a lot of people don't think about.
Yeah.
And they don't realize is that you are constantly still representing a company even when you're not at work.
And it's so interesting, and I'm sure you've had this, especially with the sports thing. You'll get a dad or something that comes up to you, and it's like he's known you forever, you know? He's like, hey, remember you were at that game and this game? And you're like, I've never met you. In your head, you're thinking, I've never met you. But it's almost so fun to just have that conversation, and you walk away from it being like, man, what a cool guy.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Most of the time. Yeah,
no, absolutely. Like I did the Southern Tier Kickoff show for a few years there for the high school and college football. And it's like, you know, I had a cool moment after the first season was over. I covered the Ernie Davis Classic that they do, you know, the All-Star, the East First West. It was at the Johnson City High School. And after the game was over, because I'm walking around taking pictures of like all the kids and saying hi to people. At the very end of the game, I was taking some pictures of the Donovan Tom and I believe Cameron O'Brien. They played for Shenango Valley.
Okay.
And all of a sudden, one of the parents was like, STK, Southern Tier Kickoff. And I was like, whoa, that's kind of cool. Like, he actually knew, like, the brand and stuff like that. That was a cool feeling. But, yeah, that feeling of, like, you made that kind of impact and they know who you are and they're excited to see you. That's the cool part, yeah.
I loved your interview style where you would throw the ball back and forth.
Yeah, first and 12. That was a great show.
You got to have some good bloopers from that, right?
Oh, there's one specifically. Yeah, I wanted to do – I never got around to it, and I kind of regret it. I wanted to do a blooper, like a collage of, you know, all the things that have happened over my time with it. I never got around to it, unfortunately, but there is one. I did an interview with Evan Silster from Norwich.
First season.
It was like the third episode. And, you know, the way I always end the episode was either, depending on their position, doing something fun. Whether I throw a pass to them, if they're a wide receiver, or if they're a quarterback, I try to catch it. Or if they're a running back, I'll race them. And I'm not a very fast guy, but it's like, you know what, it's still fun. Maybe I don't want to pull my hammy, but like, we'll race. So I told Evan, let's race. At the very end, and I actually had the shoes I have on right now, the Air Force Ones, were the shoes I was wearing that day. We're on a grass field, and I go down to the starting line, and he's next to me. And I go, all right, the videographer with us, I was like, 3, 2, 1, go. And she goes, 3, 2, 1, go. And as soon as I push off, I slipped on something. And Evan took off. And I slip, and I land in the grass. You can find the footage. It's on Instagram. For Southern Tier Kickoff, but like we race, he smokes me. And then I'm like, what did I slip? And I look at the, I have a bunch of dog.
No, come on.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So I was like, you get to see me like eat it. And I was like, oh, that was a good one. And then there's a couple of other.
That's great.
But yeah, that was definitely that top looper I had.
Wow. Cause yeah, I mean, that was so, the interviews are so great, and you guys, you know, you're throwing a football back and forth. Everyone always catches it, you know, and I'm like, there has to be a great blooper reel somewhere in there.
There's was it Scotty Howard, I believe, from Susquehanna Valley. There was one time where he dropped the ball. That's the only time that anybody has dropped the ball when we were passing it back and forth. It made the best of at the very end of the year.
That's impressive.
Yeah, I think that was the only time, but. And I raced Adam DeSantis last year.
I remember that one.
He's a dude.
Yes.
He's a dude. I think he just committed to Colgate, too. Yeah. Keep it in the family, because I know his brother and sister go there, too. But, you know, big congrats to him for that. But, yeah, he was awesome. I've had some great interviews. And I was thinking about that. Like, what's the most fun interview I've done? And, man, there's been some great ones. But, like, the most like, casual back-and-forth conversation I had was probably Mike Wandell out of Newark Valley. He was awesome to talk with. And then probably Evan Silstra. I mean, I've had plenty. I did Mike Mancini from Maine Endball, too. That was a really cool one. That was the very first one ever. But, yeah, there's a lot of great memories for that.
I've been hoping maybe, you know, being his senior year, I could get Adam on here at some point and chat with him. I think that would be a lot of fun. But, you know, when you're a reporter, there's always a crazy day, right? You know, a big game, something's going on. It's a day maybe you walk in and you're not expecting it and it goes crazy. So you said you had one specific day that was wild.
Okay, so I have to look it up, but I don't remember the specific day. It was August of 2018. And this is when I was on the morning show. So my normal shift, as I said, was 12:30 to 9. I got a call at about 11:30 at night, being like, hey, we just got reports of shots fired on Clinton Street in Binghamton. We need somebody to go. Because protocol, you don't want a reporter to go by themselves if it's shots fired and stuff like that. So I was like, okay. So I come in. Anne Spiracco and I go to the scene and confirm shooting. We were on the scene for probably an hour. So I got back to the station afterwards at like 1:15 in the morning. And I start producing and start putting together my show. And then around 2:30 over the police scanner, we hear train derailment in Deposit. And so I'm like, oh my gosh. So then I call in the videographer, the morning videographer. I'm like, we got to go to this. We're going to do live shots like all morning. So Seth, the producer at the time, and I were getting everything ready. Claire Kerr, my morning anchor at the time, came in early too to help. So Dan Conklin and I grab our gear. I had to stop at my house real quick. So I grabbed my personal keys and put them in the news car. We stopped at my house. I got a raincoat because it was starting to rain pretty badly. Got my stuff, took off to Deposit. Covered it all morning long, did live shots every single show for the 2 hours, and I did some more live shots for like the 3 minute break cut-ins that we do. At 9 o'clock, I got relieved by Grace Gagnon. She was a reporter, so she came out in a separate news car. There was, you know, EMTs everywhere.
Sure.
So those parking was a nightmare. So Dan and I got there kind of early, so we had a decent parking spot. Grace had to park a little ways away, but where Dan and I had parked the car, we really couldn't get out. So I talked with Grace. She's like, just take my car. And so I was like, okay, cool. So I grab my my makeup bag and my coat and everything. I go and grab her car. I start heading back. And when I got toward Nineveh, before Windsor there, I got a call from our assignment editor who was like, we just got a report about a car that was found in a creek.
Oh, wow.
And so I'm like, okay. So I go and stop at that at like 10 a.m. And I see the same state troopers who were at the derailment all morning long. And I'm, hey, long time no see, guys. So they talk with me and they confirm some details and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So I do, you know, a live shot for that as well at the noon show. And I finally get back to the station in the news car and I start to put my stuff away. And my boss is like, well done. Like, what a night. And I was like, yeah, unbelievable. And I go to grab my personal keys and I left them in the car.
I was going
to
say,
car.
I feel like your keys.
I left my personal keys in the car all the way back in Deposit. So then my boss was like, just take the news car home. It'll be okay. And I was like, all right. So I went home and slept for like 10 hours. And that that was unbelievable. That entire August was wild because I had that night and then there was Speedy Fest had a huge rain, got washed out on that Friday, but that rain also caused an incredible amount of flooding in the area. And right. I did a specific live shot outside of a church in Appalachian, where I went live there for the 6 and 6:30 and did like a walk and talk where, Dan had the mobile Live View backpack that allows us to, you know, go live out in the field. And he had the camera and we walked along and we went past like this church that the water had come rushing up and knocked the door in. So the whole church got flooded and we were walking along and like looking at the damage and stuff. And actually won an award for that for morning show broadcast. Yeah. But that was now a month. It was just unbelievable. But I mean, that's just one of 100 different stories, you know what I mean? Of just the memories and stuff like that there.
Was that your favorite part of the job being that you could go to work and never know what was around the corner?
Yeah, absolutely. Because like it, the one thing that – so I don't mind saying I have ADHD. So going to work and expecting something new and not doing the same thing every single day really helps me. And even with this new job, it's something new every day, which is really cool too. So that was – I love that part of the job. You don't know what you're going to get into. You don't know. It could be, you know, run-of-the-mill, go-through-the-motions type of the day or – you could have three huge breaking news stories that you have to cover and stuff like that. But yeah, that was a part of the job that I really looked forward to it. And like I said, in my goodbye that I mentioned earlier, like I never saw it as work. I always enjoyed going there and I always enjoyed being able to be a part of a production like that. It was really cool.
Looking back on it, did you find that you enjoyed one more than the other? I mean, you've done news, you've been behind the camera, you've been in front of the camera, you've done sports. That's why I said coming in that you were the jack of all trades, because I admire how you kind of started as like, hey, I'll do anything you want me to do. Yep. I'll sweep the floors by the end, you're the morning anchor.
There's so many different aspects of the job that I really liked. The one that I think I was most excited about, it's just because I love sports so much, but putting on that Southern Tier kickoff show and even being able to help film highlights, it's cool. It's just exciting to be able to kind of like put that stuff together. But being able to anchor and tell people about the news every night was just such like a cool experience and something that I was like so happy to be able to do. But yeah, like looking back on it, I even did weather one time. One time, I mean, like, it was just a 7-day. I didn't, like, get in front of the green screen. So I literally can say I did almost, I think I did every single on-air job there was there. Yeah.
Yeah.
But being able to kind of do that sports show was a lot of fun. That was a blast.
I know everybody always jokingly says, like, oh, the weatherman's always wrong, blah, blah,
yeah,
blah.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how hard it is. And I don't know if you got to do it a little bit in school. I know I did, where they're like, hey, you know, big shot, why don't you go in front of the green screen?
Yeah.
Everything's opposite.
Yep.
You know, and it's like, that's hard. That's really hard.
People don't realize. So that is the one thing that I think everyone's most interested in when they get to a new station.
Agreed.
Is seeing that green screen where the weather's done. Because what people don't realize, if I can paint a picture, so you have the big green screen in front of you and say Howard standing in front of it, and you have the one camera looking, you know, straight at you. To his left and right, when you see him turn, there are monitors that are up to his left and right where he can see himself. So if you notice, when you watch the next weathercast, he's never actually looking at the green screen. He's looking off camera because he can see a TV screen of himself, so he knows where to point on the green screen.
Yeah.
Watch his eyes. He's always looking up and away. And that's something that people never realize, is that. And it messes with you the first time, because then you look at yourself on the camera, and then you look to your side and you see yourself, and you're trying to figure out, okay, wait, my hand, where's my hand going? Like, how do I move? And even I tried it once or twice. It is not easy.
No,
it's not easy at all. And again, like you said, trying to predict the future too and stuff like that.
Well, and I remember too, doing it in school a little bit, you know, you're kind of in control of what the next slide is.
Yep.
And so you have to be constantly thinking about what you're saying, but then also, hey, if I switch this slide, am I going to be standing in front of it? Do I have to move to the other side?
Yeah.
When do I move? When do I not move? I'm like, this is a whole song and dance.
Absolutely. Like, no, seriously. And there's like a lot of it's ad-lib too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. So whenever I can ad-lib on air, it was, you know, I enjoyed it because it was kind of exciting. Those weathercasts, Howard has like bullet points, you know, that he goes through, Brian, whoever is doing the weather. But it's like, it is mostly ad-libbed. Like, you know, he's obviously knows what he's talking about, but he's like, you know, that's why you have those fun flubs and stuff like that, because on air, live TV, you never know. So
I went down last week and was on the Fox 40 football preview show.
Yeah.
With Ian. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm so out of my element right now. You know, it's like,
yeah.
And it's funny because I think just as media guys, you're like, yeah, come on down, sit, we'll chat football, you know, whatever. And I'm like, I haven't looked at a teleprompter since I was in school. I haven't done any TV since I was in school. I was like, where do I look? I just felt like a complete newbie. But I had a blast. It was fun.
No, it's at Fourth and Goal, I think, their show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool. I like, you know, and that's the thing. Even like, now that I'm not with WBNG, I just appreciate any sort of coverage that any outlet does. And I think people feel the same way too. I mean, even when I was at BNG, there was never any like bad blood between other stations.
No.
Whenever I see them at like games and stuff like that, you know, he's like, you know, high five them, dap them up, whatever. It's just, you know, how you doing? You know, how's work going? And it's just like, I don't know. There's no rivalry or anything. Like, maybe unspoken, because you do want to try to do the best coverage possible. But like, there's never any animosity or anything.
I always I think we're all kind of in the same boat, and you all want to, you know, try to do the best you can.
Yeah.
But there's no like anchorman.
I was just gonna say, there's no like there's no big like rumble or anything like that. Like we'll hang out with each other and stuff. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. We're all in the same boat.
We're not in the parking lot with tridents and swords fighting it out.
Hand grenades, so. Yeah, exactly.
But you know, for you, sports wise, this is a question I always get up here, and I don't think, again, it's another thing where an outsider doesn't understand how stressful is a Friday or a Saturday where you guys are trying to get around, get highlights from every game. Everyone's always like, why weren't you here? Why'd you only stay for 5 minutes? And it's like, it's so difficult to be everywhere at the same time. How stressful were Fridays and Saturdays, especially during football?
They were unbelievable. I mean, because that's the thing. So with sports departments, as you know, it's usually two people.
Yeah.
And so when you have people who are like, why didn't you cover this? Like, why didn't you come? You missed this. It's like the truth of the matter really is like, we would have loved to be at every single event that night, but we have to decide what's going to be the best for our show and where can we prioritize our time? Because if I'm going to go try to cover 8 things by myself, it's, you know, 5 minutes, like you said, at one event, I get the highlights I need and I'm out. And then it's like on to the next thing. Friday nights, though, we were very fortunate to have a lot of volunteers. So a lot of producers and people behind the scenes who like sports were like, you want to film football? Here's a camera.
Yeah.
Head out to Tioga and get the game tonight, or like head out to Delhi. You know what I mean? Like just try to get as much coverage as possible. And it's like, I know people appreciate it, but there is that like, yeah, you can't please everybody.
You can't.
It's so tough.
And when I first started doing this, it ate me alive for a while.
Yep.
And I really had to just get to a point where I said, take a deep breath. You know inside that you're giving it 110%.
Yep.
And that's all you can do.
Yeah.
And if it's not good enough for somebody, and then I still do it to this day. I'll be like, okay, I know that someone said, oh, you weren't here, you weren't there. So I'll try to backtrack and get there on another time.
Yes.
Just to say like, hey, look, I took your comment and I want to try to be here. But for you guys too, and I mean, my geographical area is quite large too, but when you think about having a hard deadline, it's like, well, from BNG to Unitigo is an hour and change. How are you going to get there and stay for a whole game and get back
in time
and have everything prepared, edited, written, ready to go for your football show at night when the game's over? When I always think about this with Unitigo, because oftentimes when games are over there, they all go to the firehouse in town and have pizza and the parents and everybody, and they turn the show on and they want to see the highlights. And so, you know, sometimes I've been there and they'll be like, that's it, you know, one catch or one pass. And it's like,
Look.
I always try to defend the TV guys, because I'm like, look, they got all the way up here and they got all the way back and they went to 15 other games, you know, and it's like, I think people think it's magic sometimes.
I mean, it's so tough, especially if you're either by yourself or just with two people. You can only cover so much. But again, no, you are right, though. It's like, look, if people do comment on stuff, they do take that to heart, where it's like, okay, I didn't get out to that Whitney Point game yesterday. I'll try to get there next time.
And yeah.
They circle that, you know, try to make it a priority, because there is that wide variety. You know, you don't want to see the same team every single week unless it's, you know, a big game or it's almost a convenience factor. That's like another big part of it.
It is.
You know, WBNG, I can throw a football from the station and hit the Johnson City field. It's like I could just turn on the camera on top of the station, just get highlights that way if I wanted to, type of a thing. So, but I mean, it's tough. I mean, obviously we take, you know, what the viewers say to heart most of the time. And we're, like I said earlier, we're doing this for the students and for the family members and viewers and stuff like that. So we want to try to put out the best product possible. But yeah, it's tough. It's trying to get everything possible, and it's something.
It's part of the challenge too that I enjoy.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and then once in a while you'll have that night where you feel like you really hit a home run and you're like, man, we knocked it out of the park tonight. We killed it. So those nights always keep me going too. It's like I had everything planned, everything went great. We got what we needed. And then there's those other nights where it's like, yeah, that didn't go to plan at all.
The memory card's corrupted. I don't have any footage from this game. It's like, it happens. It happens. And that is what a lot of people, unless you're in the business, you just don't understand that, like, you know, it can hit the fan sometimes. And it's just like, there are great nights where everything goes perfectly. Everybody has their, like you said, highlights in on time. Everything's written. You anchor on air perfectly and everything. And then there's other nights where it's just like, I lost my SD card, or I didn't bring an extra battery, so I don't have footage, or I can't like get through this highlight without stumbling and stuff like that. Yeah, it's wild, like how dynamic both sides of it are sometimes.
Well, you know, another thing that I've really admired about you, and I wanted to bring up, and we chatted a little bit about this, is that, you know, you obviously, you have your son, and things don't go according to plan, per se, and you handled it so well. And I was just hoping you could tell us a little bit about that, because not only are you're anchoring, but now you have this huge thing in your life where your son is born prematurely. Yeah. And I'm just wondering how you handled all that and kept it together, because it's so hard. I mean, when that light comes on, everyone wants you to be this cheery guy, right? That you have talked about, and you handled it so well and so gracefully. And I just didn't know if you could take us on that journey.
Sure. No, I mean, for anybody who doesn't know, my son Max was born in November of last year. He was due in February. So he was born about 3.5 months early. He was at 25 and a half weeks. And, you know, a typical baby is born at 40 weeks. So he was born at 1 pound, 9 ounces. He spent 4 months at a NICU, the intensive care unit for babies in Syracuse at Krauss Hospital. Shout out to them for their coverage or their, you know, care for Max. It was unbelievable. And then he transferred to Wilson. So his entire time for the first 4 months of his life were in the hospital. And that was extremely difficult. That was something where constantly in the back of my mind, even when I'm anchoring and talking about stuff, you know, there's this thought of like, is he going to be okay?
Yeah.
And my wife, you know, even before, you know, she gave birth, she was at Krauss for almost a month beforehand. And then Max was born. And so that was another huge factor of his, you know, my wife is at the hospital in Syracuse. I'm trying to take time off. I'm trying to anchor in between shows and stuff like that. But through all of it, WB&G and management completely understood. They were supportive. They were awesome about, you know, being able to, you know, really support me through that part of my life. And so I'm very grateful for them for being able to be there for that. But Max finally, you know, he came home and in March, and it's, you know, it's been great. It's been, you know, ups and downs here and there, but so many, like so many more good days than bad days. And it was just, it's hard to kind of describe unless you've been through it. Unless you're, you know, a new parent like yourself, you know, is just, there's constant worry. There's constant, like I'm in charge of, you know, taking care of this little one and watching after them. But yeah, I mean, like trying to anchor and keep my mind focused on my work and stuff like that. And having a support system at work helped so much. And, you know, driving to Syracuse in the morning to see Max and then driving back home and going to work and anchoring, you know, and all that. It was probably the most difficult part of my life. This past year has just been a roller coaster with everything. But that being said, I've gotten through it. I'm continuing to move forward and, you know, really kind of, like I said earlier, rediscover who I am, and I've come out stronger from it, I believe, and everything like that. But, you know, long story short, we're all doing fantastic. Max is doing great. He's hitting all of his milestones.
It's awesome.
He's, as I like to say, bulking right now. He's putting on the weight and he's doing fantastic. So we couldn't be more happy.
How, I have to ask this, 'cause it's like, I feel like since, you know, since Josie's been in my life, it's like I almost have dad guilt. And it's something I'm kind of working on too, where it's like you go to work and you kind of like have a taste of your old life where you're just like at a game and you kind of forget about it. And then it's like, oh, like my wife's at home with our baby. Like, whoa. So what was that like for you knowing, all right, like my wife and my son are in Syracuse and I want to be there 24 hours a day, but you have to like continue your life too and work. And that just had to be, I don't know how you did it. Honestly.
No, I mean like, so I tell people this and I don't mind telling you either or the listeners. So that Friday, so Katie was admitted on a Wednesday. That Friday, we were already planning on moving. Like we were So that Friday of that week, we had already like, I rented a moving van and we were going to move into her mother-in-law's house in Owego. So everything was already in motion. So I was up there with her for that Wednesday, Thursday, and I had to leave on that Friday. And when I tell you, leaving her at the hospital was the probably most difficult thing I've ever – I cried the entire way home.
Yeah.
The entire drive from Syracuse back to Binghamton, I was a wreck. Because my life – I don't know what's happening with Katie. I don't know what's happening with my, you know, unborn child. And I was just a mess. And then it is just to think about where things were and where they are now, just unbelievable. But it was so difficult. It was so difficult trying to keep it together and stay strong and stuff like that. And, you know, even it's okay to have those moments, though. I'm learning that you don't have to be strong all the time. It's okay to kind of open up and lean on other people and stuff like that. And that's something that I've learned over the last year, and it's helped a lot. That's for sure.
It's one thing I've learned doing this show is there's been so many people who came and sat right in that chair that I thought I knew. And then they tell you a story and it's like, I had no idea that's what you were going through at that time. And it's like, wow, you truly never know what someone else is going through and how they're doing it. And I mean, I can remember thinking, like, at the time, because my wife was pregnant at the same time as well, and it's like, I just can't imagine that drive to Syracuse every day and how you did that, and just not only time-wise, but just what must have gone through your head on those drives, like being a new dad with my wife expecting, like, just everything, every scenario goes through your head.
So. Absolutely. No, I mean, you think about everything. I listen to a lot of podcasts on the way up there and back, and it's just like the drive kind of like you – it's one of those things where you, if it's a longer drive, you know, all of a sudden you get behind the wheel and then you kind of regain consciousness and you're like in Syracuse. I had a lot of those moments where I'm like, how did I get here?
Yeah.
Didn't, you know, kind of zone out type of a thing. But yeah, you know, that I thought about a lot, thought about life a lot and stuff like that. And how am I going to get through this? How is everything going to be okay? You worry a lot in this. But again, at the end of the day, everything turned out fantastic. So
what was the day like when they told you he's ready to go home?
I was elation. Absolutely. This is the best way to describe it. Because we've been, you know, you're wondering when can it finally happen? Because for the first thing for us was having him transfer to Wilson. Because he, you know, from Syracuse, having him at Wilson is, you know, going from an hour and a half drive to just, you know, a 20-minute drive. So that was a huge first step.
Yeah.
Having him come down to Wilson. And then finally, you know, when we got the news, hey, it's looking like he's going to be able to come home next week. Oh, my gosh. Like that feeling of just excitement, nervousness. Oh, my gosh. Like we got to get everything, make sure it's all ready and stuff. It was, oh, my goodness. We got home and Katie's mom had a big sign that said, welcome home, Max. And we had like, you know, streamers up and stuff like that. It was such a cool day. It's just that feeling of like, finally, after four months, I have like my son feel like actually like it. It always, I always had like, you know, Max is my son, but now he's home. He really feels like, you know, this is how it's meant to be.
That moment of bringing your child home for the first time is so special. Like, I just also can't imagine that you waited so much longer than anybody else. And I know my wife would want me to ask you this, like, how did your wife do it? The strength to be in the hospital for that long and kind of just be disconnected from the real world and going through everything that she went through, like, how did she do it?
You'd have to ask her. I mean, like, she is so strong. She's one of, like, you know, the strongest women I know. And just to be able to have, you know, she told me a big part of it was having me there. But I know, like, you know, I wasn't in that hospital bed.
Yeah.
I wasn't the one, you know, who was pregnant. She did all that. And so I don't think that she really gives herself enough credit sometimes, just the strength that she had to be able to go through something like that and how scary it was. You know, cause I couldn't be there every single night. So kind of to be alone at the hospital and stuff, like, you know, I love her so much and just, you know, she's such an incredible woman. I'm so proud to be able to say she's part of my life, but yeah, she, I don't know how she did it, but I knew she would.
Yeah.
That I don't, you know, she may not have thought she would have been able to, but I knew she would. At the end of the day, I was like, you've got this. So
amazing. The strength we all have when you get into a certain spot in your life, right?
You really start to discover who you really are.
Yeah.
When adversity is at its highest, you really can find out who you are and who other people are.
Yeah.
And that's something I learned through this last year.
I remember at the time you had put out a note on social media that I don't even think you really even said what was going on, but that you
were going to
step away a little bit. And I feel like so many people reached out to you. And
it was unbelievable.
You know, that says a lot about you and what you've done for the community and how the community wanted to give back to you.
Yeah.
Just probably people saying, if there's anything I can do, you know, let me know.
It was that. That is the part that I don't think people – I haven't really been able to express just how grateful I am. And that's the reason why I have been so open on social media as I am, because it was almost a way of me kind of – venting to others, because even though, well, I have a lot of people who are like, well, they're just viewers. Like, why would you give them such a personal part of your life? Well, it's like, they're not just viewers, they're also humans who have probably been through similar situations. And the amount of people who messaged me, sent me, like, I've been through the exact same thing as you. I've been through, you know, if you need anything, feel free to talk to me. These are people I don't know.
Right.
I have no idea who they are, but they, you know, they see me, they know who I am, but they're willing to listen to me if I need to. And when I finally made the post of like, my son was born premature, the amount of people who sent me stories of like, it's going to be okay. My son, here's a picture of my son from 1993. He was born at 2 pounds, and this is him now, you know, 30 years later. This is what he, and just like it, basically everyone going to be like, it's scary, but it's okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be okay. Max is going to be okay. And that was unbelievable. And, that was a big part, you know, for me to continue to share stuff and updates, is not only because I felt like the viewers deserve to know what's, you know, what's happening after them showing me so much love. It's kind of my way of repaying, like, this is our journey with Max together. You know, this is the thank you for showing support. Look how well he's doing. But also, it was helping me to kind of, you know, share a picture, then see people like, I'm so proud of him. They never met my son. They don't know who he is. Like, but like the fact that they cared that much helped me in the end. And it helped me kind of like have that moment of like, he's going to be okay.
Yeah.
He's going to be fantastic. It was so cool.
I think the big thing that I've learned over the years is that people will connect with a certain personality on a news channel because of your personality, you know, because it would be easy for you to just have sat in your chair and read the teleprompter and gone about your life, right? Yeah. But like, you open the door a little bit, and I feel like that allows so many people to come in and get to know you, and like, that's why they tune in every morning, because you're not just giving them the news, like, you are their friend.
Yeah, that was something that I had to learn early on. So when I first started anchoring, very early, like right after I graduated Oswego, they gave me some noon, you know, anchor of the noon broadcast or fill in the morning show. And I put on my anchor voice because I want to be professional. You know what I mean? Like, because that's what I thought people wanted to hear.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, they just want to hear you. They just want to wake up and see somebody and almost listen to somebody who's just being authentic and just there and happy to be there. And that's what I saw. I started to really learn that in late 2016, early 2017, when I had my first morning co-anchor, Claire, join me. And we were able to start being a little bit more personable and have fun conversations and have fun. And I was like, you know, this isn't really just anchoring. This is more of just like a, hey, thanks for joining us. You know, like waking up and having, you know, this is how you want to start your day. This is what maybe happened overnight that you missed. And that's what I think like a lot of young people when they first start off is they want to be taken seriously. Which is great. Sure, you want to make a good first impression, but I don't want to hear who you think I want to hear. I want to hear you.
That's a good point.
I want to know who you are. You're passionate about this. You're doing this for a reason. Open up a little bit and really let yourself shine. And that's what I started to do, and that's what I tried to continue to do with my anchoring, is that I realize every single night, like, yeah, there may be like serious stories and stuff, but when I have that opportunity to have a little bit of fun, I'm going to take advantage of it.
Yeah.
Because those are the moments that people really remember, and they're like, "Ah, okay, that's the Scott Cicina, you know, or that's Caitlin." Like, I love those guys together. You know, it's moments like that that I really like, really enjoyed.
And it's obvious to see. I'm sitting here laughing because I'm thinking about some things. It's obvious to see that you have that rapport and that it's natural. Because I can remember in school, again, going back to doing TV work, all right, credits roll, and they're like, all right, make some chit-chat, right? And you're like with another student, and you're supposed to just be looking natural on camera while the music's rolling. And
take the fake papers and like hit them.
Yep, doing the thing on the table. Yeah, yeah. And you're like, this is the fakest thing I've ever done. But how, like, making that look natural, like, I guess you just get used to it after a while. I'm not sure.
It's that, but it's also the person you're with. So that you got to be able to feel comfortable who you're anchoring next to or working with. So Caitlin and I are like, you know, best friends. Like, we still hang out all the time. We, you know, would do things together all the time. So it wasn't just anchoring with a co-anchor. It was anchoring with my friend. So we didn't really have to work on like
the chit chat.
The chit chat just came naturally. And then same thing with Howard or when Jacob or whoever would join us at the desk too. It was like, those are my friends. I don't have to like really strain or try to make things like happen. Like, during commercial breaks, like the stories I could tell you, I won't say anything, but like, it's just like, even, but during commercial breaks, sometimes we would be like, hey, we got this story coming up. Like, what do you want to talk? Like, we would kind of pre like rehearse what we're going to talk about. And that happens a lot more than you might think. It's just kind of like, it's not just on a whim. Sometimes it is. Sometimes things would happen. It's just like that made for great TV. But most of the times we were kind of like, we would talk a little bit in advance, like, hey, I'll ask Howard about this, or like, or when Howard was doing his weather and we couldn't talk, we'd have like hand signals and stuff.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I'll talk first. I'm going to do this. Like, it's so much fun. Yeah. There's stuff like that.
There is kind of that. And in radio, almost the same way, like, you have this side communication with your producer or whoever you're on the air with. And a lot of times now when I'll have somebody on the radio with me and they're kind of a first-time color guy, like a coach or something, they're like, I didn't realize there was so much to this. Like, you go to break, you're talking to the guy back in the studio, yep. and, like, you're timing things out, and he's like, I didn't realize there was all this to it. And it's like, yeah, but it comes natural after a while. And
you don't even think about
it. Yeah, it's just fun. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Well, as we hit the home stretch here, you know, we talked a little bit before we jumped on about I always hear from student athletes especially, I love your job, I love what you do, how do I get into that, what do I go to school for? And I just thought as we kind of hit the home stretch, as I said, your advice to someone listening that wants to get into this, because people see the glamour but not maybe the back end.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's a very glamorous job from the outside looking in. Like, you know, oh, you get to be on TV or you get to cover sports every single night. That's so cool, like putting highlights together or you're on the radio. It is a super glamorous job, and when it's fun, it's fun. But when it's rough, it is rough. There are times when you just like, you won't even think. Like, just because my shift ends at 11:45,
right.
there may be breaking news at 11:44.
Yeah.
And it's like, we got to go. And then it's like, okay. And then I'm not back to the station till 1 a.m.
Yeah.
or later. And it's like, that's the part of it where it's like, your job is not over when you think it's over. Even when I'm at home, like, you know, when I was still on the air and stuff, I'd have like, you know, constantly looking at my phone, keeping up to date on what's happening at the station and stuff. You are constantly in a state of work, even when you're at home. And that can have a toll on you really quickly. You have to, I got pretty good at kind of disconnecting and leaving work at work and my home life separate and stuff like that. But it's very difficult. And if for somebody who wants to get into this business, just go in knowing that, it may not be all you think it is, and it may not be all it's cracked up to be, but if you are passionate about this, stick with it. That was something that I kind of had to do, is there's going to be bad days. But, you know, if you can grind through those bad days and really focus on the good days and what's your end goal, what do you want to do, what are you striving for, and keep that motivation, I mean, it can be worth it. It can be absolutely worth it. But I know it's not uncommon for a lot of kids out of college to go to a station for 2 years. And then after a month or two, they're like,
they're burned
out. Oh, I'm burned out. Or
yeah.
like the comment, like I always will tell people, just don't look at the comments when it comes to stories sometimes.
Yeah. Don't do it.
Because they'll take it personally. And it's like, if you're having to do a very divisive story about something, they may, you know, the comments may be very like, you know, tough to read and stuff, but it's like, you're just getting started. Like, it was the same way for me. I remember, you know, I had a lot of people like at the very beginning when I first started anchoring, we're like, oh, who's this kid?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
That's a tough hurdle to get over.
Yes, it is. Where you're not taken seriously because all they see is, you know, some 22, 23 year old guy who's just getting started and trying to figure out who he is and trying to, you know, make sure he's doing his the best he can. But, you know, to people at home, it may not be good enough and they feel like they want to, you know, put a comment out there and then you think about that and it's in the back of your head and it's going forward. It can be a very ugly business. But if you can just not let that get to you, as difficult as it is, if you can just somehow understand that really the only comments and the only opinions that truly matter at the end of the day are your friends around you, your bosses and yourselves. I've always would try to tell people, look, like these people who are commenting probably have never stepped foot inside of a TV station and probably never grabbed the camera before and have probably never covered breaking news. They don't know what goes into this type of coverage. But, you know, you'll get through this. Don't let it get to you. And that's what helped me, is just understanding I know what I'm doing. I went to school for this. I know what I'm capable of doing. I know what I did is the right thing type of a thing. You're gonna have bad days, but you're gonna have a lot of good days.
And yeah,
I can very fortunate to say I've had way, way, way more good days than bad days.
And for me, with the comments, it took me a while to realize. Well, they thought about that for 10 seconds, typed it in, hit send, and they went on with their day. And then I would stew over it for 2-3 days.
Oh yeah, have the anxiety over it and stuff like that. I get it.
And
yeah.
It really bugged me when I first got here. I think small town sports and all of that, and like it just started to eat me up a little bit, and I just kind of had to be like, okay, you know, I just have to put it away.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's tough for me here too, because it's just me for sports. So I feel like a lot when I'm home, I really do try to put it away. But then if something happens, like I feel like I don't have that backup coverage. Like there's not somebody here when I'm at home that's going to answer the phone or whatever. So yeah, it's a tough industry, and I feel like kids get into it. And that's always my advice too, is just stick it out.
Yeah.
You know, give it a really fair shot. If you get down the road and you want to do something else, I totally get it.
Yeah.
I totally get it. But at least give it a fair shot. And I think that can be hard sometimes because you're like, wow, I'm off the clock right now and they called me back in and I'm not exactly getting overtime pay here. And,
nope.
You know, there's just all these things to it that I think the outside world doesn't see.
And it's hard to convey that. It's hard to kind of get people to understand that. I think it's one of those things where it's like, I came in on my off day to cover this and you're upset with me. You know what I mean? It's just, that's the reality of it sometimes.
And I always tell people, I think TV is way more complicated with that because guess what? If I get called in and I'm in, my shorts and a t-shirt, I can stroll down here and we can put it on the air. We'll put it together. I mean, you guys got to be somewhere. You got to have all your equipment, your camera stuff. You got to look good. And there's just so much more too. It's honestly why I never went into TV because I was like, I saw what it really takes. And I was like, I feel like I took the lazy man's route going with this.
No, I mean, I was going to say even before we got started here, like you just mentioned, you're out here kind of by yourself for coverage type of thing.
Yeah.
So especially basketball season, when you're covering game, I'm like, I don't know if you've heard of this school. Where
is he?
I would have to look up, you would like abbreviate school names. So I'd have to kind of be like, where's CH? I'd have to like start Googling schools. But that's the cool part too, is that like that coverage is so extensive that sometimes I don't think people from an outside perspective looking in really can understand how much work goes into something like that.
Right.
But from my perspective, I'm like, he's getting all of these schools that I've never even heard of.
Right.
And that is like, I just want to, commend you for that because that coverage is unbelievable, especially for, Delaware County, which is a pretty big county.
Well, that was one thing that I noticed when I got here is we covered traditionally like four schools along the I-88 corridor. It used to be Sydney, BG, Afton, Unitego, and some Harpersville. And I said, CDO stands for Shenango, Delaware, Otsego. I'd like to really try to take that as literally as I can. And my boss was like, I think you're out of your mind. He's like, I don't even know where half those schools are. The schools in the Delaware League, the Roxburys, the South Courtwrights, the Stamfords.
South Courtright. Yeah. That was the one that I'm like, where the heck is South Courtright?
And for me, being a local small school guy, I said, I know how much it means to those kids because just nobody was taking the time to go out. And just they're not in a TV market, really. So there's really no reason for a TV station to go out there. It's in fringe newspaper, areas. And I said, I'm just going to give it a try and see how it goes. And it's worked really well for me. But it has been very funny. Because people are like, Nate, I don't even know where you were yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, where is that place? And I'm like, well, they graduate 12 kids. But
those 12 kids will remember that.
Yeah.
Like we said earlier, man, that just being able to go out and cover and they're like, oh, Nate's here.
Yeah.
Oh, Nate's here. Like, I know that exact feeling.
Yep.
Where like, you walk by maybe a student section. They're like, oh, Scott, like BB&G's here.
For this.
Like they act a little bit more hype and stuff like that. Yeah.
And that's what's so cool about it. And for me, it was like, okay, we're not in Binghamton. Like we're up here. How can I do what you guys do and bring that to a smaller school audience? So that's kind of always been my goal is like, all right, I'm going to try to take the time to go out there and do something special for those kids because they see what a Main Endwell, a Johnson City, a Vestal kid gets. And they're like, man, that's so cool. And
I'm just as good as them.
Yeah.
I want that cover. Yeah.
I'm like, if we can even give them a slice of that.
Yep.
Like I was just at a game yesterday and a mom that was working the concession stand said, you made my kid's day when you mentioned them on Twitter. And I said, really? And she's like, yeah, she scored a goal. And that's what she was so excited about. And she's been wanting to do that since you mentioned her brother last basketball season. And I'm like,
that's cool.
Like you don't realize what one tweet or something can do.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of a strange thing, but it's cool.
Absolutely.
Very cool. So, all right, we'll leave you with our last question. The question we ask everybody is favorite local place to eat.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I'm right off the bat, instant reaction, Nick's in Endicott. That is my go-to.
Okay.
In my opinion, best pizza in the area, some of the best Italian food in the area. I'm an Endicott boy or Endicott.
Yeah.
So that's my go-to, Nick's.
Knicks, great choice. Yeah. I've never been there.
Oh, man, check it out.
Got to go?
Fantastic.
Okay. It'll be that time of the year where we're starting to go down there more at the end of football season. So I'll be finding my way down there. So I will take some time and do that. That'll awesome. Be great. So did we miss anything?
I don't think so.
I love your journey. I'm excited to see where it takes you from here. I don't think we've seen the end of you somewhere on a camera for some reason. I don't know. I just have that gut feeling, but I admire everything you've done and for taking the time to come up here. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely, Nate. I really appreciate it.
So that'll wrap up episode 230 today here on the podcast. Check back in the archives. We got a lot of good stuff. We've talked to other media guys. Of course, tons of local athletes, coaches, you name it. We're trying to fit it in. So, all right, we'll see you again soon. Thanks for listening to the Nate Lull Podcast.
You've been listening to the Nate Lull Podcast. Download each new episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts.